5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Boy on 2600.
So, Forrest, you've spent some time in abandoned psychiatric hospitals over the years for fun, right?
Indeed. People have heard of the infamous Waverly Sanatorium, and we did our infamous episodes on them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people have gone there. One thing that they do have is that I think they still have it, the yearly Halloween haunted house walkthrough.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking about the presence or the lingering energetic presence of a lot of people moving through there. But it's a very festive time. And I think I was talking to people like, wow, I wonder what the spirit activity is on a night like that. And it's just, we had a laugh because like, I'm sure the spirits are like, okay, everybody just go home. This is enough. It's way too much. You got hundreds of people walking through.
I enjoy tours of those places myself. I've been to the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Also very famous.
My son. Yeah, we did a tour there. It was awesome. Not a lockdown, but it was still super fun.
Right.
That's in Weston, West Virginia, about 2 hours southwest of Kecksburg, which is why I was there.
Yeah.
But anyway, tonight's Dead Letter is about an operating and modern facility. It takes place in a, at the time, discarded wing of it. I don't know. What do you think it is that makes these places inherently spooky to us? My money is really just on the fear of facing mental health challenges that you can't manage without external resources.
Well, yeah, you know, fear of our own mortality, things beyond our control, which, you know, we all face, and that loss of control is scary. I would say, though, if you're talking practically being in there, well, one, they're abandoned. So there's always that spooky, not even kind of like the back rooms theory. I know your son was really into it.
He was. Yeah. He's so, over it now. But
yeah, I mean, it's not run down. It's just abandoned. And it feels like you may be the only person on earth. Here, you really feel the people that have gone through there, that was their lives for a while. And
yeah.
With that come a lot of stories of tragedy, especially in the earlier days, well, even up until the 60s and 70s, where the care, let's say, there weren't as stringent of a state and federal controls about the type of care you would receive, and people were either unintentionally or intentionally mistreated with poor care, abused often, because, again, they're discarded folks in a way, and it's sad. But there's a lot of energy there. And you're talking about, yes, people with severe mental health challenges, and there's no other recourse for them. And the pharmaceuticals weren't as good back then. So you warehouse them.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of heightened energy. And that is a recipe for something to fill an empty vacuum. And that's filled with spirit energy, you could say.
Well, tonight, what our listener encounters isn't your standard shadow figure or spectral mist. It's something quite different from most encounters of this type, actually.
Yeah, perhaps you could say a glitch in reality. And the most chilling part isn't just seeing it. It's the moment the anomaly stops, turns, and acknowledges you. And it raises the question, are we just watching a recording of past tragedy, or is the tragedy watching us back?
When I was 21 years old, I worked security at a hospital that treated psychiatric and addiction issues. I worked the overnight shift, 11 p.m. till 7 a.m., and I did this while going through my paramedic program. It was a good job, a good place to work, and I got to work with some really good people. These 3 years of my life were chaotic, stressful, and also wonderful. While employed there, I became a paramedic and met the woman who became my wife. Most appropriately for the job, I was able to learn and craft my ability to deal with psych patients and those dealing with chemical dependency issues. This remains one of my strong suits in my proverbial paramedic toolbox. For some background, one of my duties as a security officer was to patrol the hospitals and grounds to assess any risks. As the third shift guy, I was by myself. I would patrol the hallways, stop into the units, and check in with staff to see if anything or anyone had the chance of becoming a problem. This particular hospital, as specialized as it was relatively small. It was only two floors. This first floor had three inpatient units, and the second floor had two units. The other side of the hospital was strictly for folks with varying addiction diagnoses. When I started, and this event occurred within my first few months working at this hospital, the other unit on the second floor was empty and under construction. The hospital decided to turn that empty unit into an outpatient clinic for minors. This unit, called 2600, had once been a geriatric wing and was then converted to an adolescent wing. For a while, this kept younger and older children separated. Whether for budgetary or census reasons, the children were combined into one unit, leaving 2600 empty. This empty wing was kept locked when workers were not present, so a part of my rounds was to check 2600 for break-ins and even things such as fires or roof leaks. I did this once a shift, as there was never anything to report, except for that one night. As per my routine, I entered 2600 through the main door. After securing the secondary knob lock, I pulled it shut and stood in the large front room. This was called the milieu room, a French word meaning a person's social environment. The large room contained the nurse's desk, the doors to the medication room, the seclusion room, the unit kitchen, and about 20 seats and a television. Directly across from the main door was a long and expansive hallway that stretched straight all the way to the end. Off this hallway were all the patient rooms, about 30 rooms as my memory recalls. Each room had two beds, a bathroom, and safe furniture secured to the ground and walls. Immediately as I entered, the room felt cold. It was winter, and the empty unit was kept cooler than the occupied units, but it was far colder than I was used to. I wondered if a window had started to be replaced and the worker left, not having finished the job. I then began to wonder if a patient had broken a window from the outdoor courtyard below with a rock or something. I would have to investigate. I walked by the windows and found no evidence of problems. I moved on to check the three other rooms around the milieu and still found nothing out of the ordinary. The big room itself was normal for its current status, ladders and toolboxes scattered about. Some of the inset lighting fixtures were open, perhaps needing new bulbs or ballasts. Drop cloths and paint cans and various other items for repair and upgrade finished off the room. This was all normal. The hallway was next. I walked to the opening of the hallway and looked down the dark length of nothing. It was not completely dark on a normal night. The red exit sign would glow gently at the end of the hallway, near the locked door that led to the stairwell down to 1600. These stairs were my normal route. Check the big room, walk the hallway, go down the stairs to 1600, and go about the rest of my business. This night, however, the hallway was lighter than usual. About halfway down the hall was a blue glow. Odd for sure, but I figured that a room door had been left open and some work light was left on. I intended to turn it off before leaving. I took a few steps down the hall, making it to about the second room's door. Then I stopped in my tracks. The blue glow was not coming from an open door. I could plainly see that all the doors were closed. The door itself was glowing blue. Not a reflection from across the hall, but the door itself. Before I could take one more step forward, the blue glow grew brighter. From the glowing door emerged an odd shape. It was about the size and shape of a person, as if walking from out of a closed door and facing toward the door across the hall. The disconcerting shape stopped in the middle of the hall as I stared, bewildered and honestly terrified. I could see it was transparent. The shape wasn't ethereal or ghostly in the traditional sense, but rather looked like heat shimmer, as if it were emanating from a sun-baked asphalt road on a hot, cloudless day. I also noted that the door across the hall also began to glow faintly blue. I felt, as much as saw, the thing turn its head to stare at me. One never knows how one will react in a situation like this. I have always believed in ghosts for as long as I can think back on it. When I was very young, my family moved into my mother's childhood home, which we bought from my grandfather after the death of my grandmother and my uncle had gotten married and moved out. On one of the first nights in our new house, I woke up in the middle of the night after hearing the noise of a floor creak outside my second-story room. Not scared, but curious, my 9-year-old self smelled my late grandmother's perfume. This experience was not frightening, quite the opposite. I remember feeling a tremendous sense of peace and ease. She was just checking on me. It was a wonderful connection between a loving grandmother and a grandson who missed her very much. As I found out the next morning, my mother had a similar experience that night too. My grandmother would go on to visit every so often. I was aware of ghosts, but had never experienced anything like this hospital ghost. I raised my hand out toward it in a stop gesture. "I'm not here for you," I told it. My heart raced. I could feel my hands shaking, but I fought very hard to remain calm and show no fear. The spirit continued to stare at me. It felt like we stayed there for a very long time, frozen in a weird standoff, but in reality, it couldn't have been more than a minute. Then the spirit continued to move toward the other door. As it did so, the blue glow from the first door faded, and the other door glowed brighter as the spirit approached it. When the spirit reached the door, it vanished through it. All at the same time, the blue glows faded completely, like a switch had been flipped off, and the temperature changed. The unusual cold immediately evacuated, leaving the normal, expected room temperature. It felt, however, like a heat wave, drawing a light film of sweat to my body. Admittedly, I may not be able to blame the sweat on the temperature. I had just seen a ghost. I left through the front door, I locked up the secondary knob lock, and walked away. I went directly back to the security office, choosing to ignore that hour's rounds, and sat down heavily in the security office chair. I spent the next few hours thinking and reflecting. I never went back into 2600 by myself while it was under construction. Even after the unit rehab was completed, I couldn't help but think of that night and my experience. When the first shift guy came in the next morning, he also happened to be the supervisor, I told him flat out I would never step foot into 2600 again. He rolled his eyes and asked, "Let me guess, you saw a ghost." I freaked out, hearing someone say it out loud and so dismissively at that. Then I started yelling at him. "You knew about this? Why didn't you tell me? You should let your guards know this." "Everybody knows," he told me. He didn't believe it. He had never seen it, but there were stories apparently, and he just thought it was nonsense. He was a very smart, qualified man, but this confirmed that non-believers will rarely change their opinion. One cannot see what they are not open to. Over the next few shifts, I was able to gently bring up my story to some of the other night shift employees at the hospital. They confirmed that I wasn't alone or crazy, and they would know. Here's the story behind it all. Years before I started, when 2600 was the adolescent unit, a 17-year-old kid was brought in by the police department from his high school. He was to be evaluated for depression and possible new onset psychosis. There was no security scan process at the time. The boy was brought to the unit to be evaluated by the on-duty nurse. He sat still, looking down and saying nothing, as the staff tried to talk to him and gauge where he was at mentally. After 10 minutes of flat affect and not engaging, the boy asked to go to the bathroom. The staff obliged and advised that he should use the one in his room, the same room that was first glowing blue when I met him, and change into the issued hospital gown and pants. The boy was in the bathroom for some time, enough for them to get concerned and walk down to check on him. That was when they heard the gunshot. The staff rushed in and found him. The boy had sat on the closed seat toilet, removed the gun from God knows where, put the gun to his head, and pulled the trigger. Unfortunately, he missed the kill spot. He instead shot the bullet through his head and put himself into a coma for 7 years. At the end, he was on a ventilator and had never done more than flutter his eyes. The brokenhearted family waited 7 years to allow an EEG to test for brain activity. The test results proved the boy was brain dead and had no chance of coming back. The family authorized termination of the vent and allowed the boy to finally pass on. This apparently did not go as planned. The hospital staff, unaware that the boy was finally off life support, were reported to begin experiencing paranormal occurrences the very same night he died. The family called the hospital to let them know he was gone a few days later. A few of the staff who were still there from back when this happened attended the boy's funeral. Over the following years, until I showed up, various employees experienced different things on 2600 until it closed. While I tried to research the event on the down low, I learned that the lights had flickered, some small objects were lost and/or moved, and most reported a general sense of unease while on the unit. No one I spoke to reported an experience quite like mine. I am not sure why he chose me to appear as he did. This experience was the springboard on which my curiosity, my imagination, and my attraction to the paranormal were launched from. The boy on 2600 would not be my last paranormal encounter. My career in EMS and the medical field in general gave me ample opportunity to have more experiences. Then again, I am open to and aware of that world. Maybe that's why I see ghosts when others only see happenstance. I can't blame them for being who they are, no more than I can change who I am and my beliefs. I saw the boy on 2600, and in some ways, he is still with me.
The veil between the living and the dead is thinner than this commercial break.
On Astonishing Legends, stories about mysterious places like the 2600 unit show how much our surroundings can shape us. At the Goddard School, the focus is on creating safe, caring environments where children can grow and discover every day. Teachers act as guides, helping kids build confidence and independence while supporting their social and emotional growth. Every child is unique, so learning is personalized to match their interests and pace. Parents find a true partner in their parenting journey, knowing their child is encouraged and celebrated. The Goddard School's legacy of quality and trust means families feel confident in their choice. If you want to see what a warm, supportive school community can look like for your child, visit goddardschool.com to explore programs near you.
Back to exploring the unexplained.
Just as a story alone, just as a piece of entertainment, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it also points to what we were talking about before reading the story, that sadly, that emotional energy that may linger and imprints very heavily into the environment here. And that's extreme depression, violence, and just a sad ending that keeps on going into the afterlife.
I think another thing that adds an interesting level to this is the fact that Kevin is a paramedic student. So, and he's got training in dealing with psych patients. I actually have a very close friend that's got similar training.
Yeah.
A friend of yours as well. In fact, he hosted the very first episode. He co-hosted the very first episode of Astonishing Legends just by a fluke.
That's right. Mark, well, I think in this case,
that's what he does now.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Not a paramedic, but he's a nurse, an RN trained to deal with psych patients.
Yeah.
But I guess what I was going to say is this trains you to have a calm demeanor and not to overreact in a panicky situation.
Yes.
But you know, by the same token, Kevin seemed like it's like, okay, what am I seeing here? He's he's standing there wide eyed and trying to figure it out. And also, this is just a very different kind of manifestation from one that I've heard of before, especially with the objects in the real world glowing a certain color.
Well, I have a few comments about that. But it's interesting that you say that because our friend, he's a pretty calm demeanor.
Yeah.
And a great sense of humor. I think you need both of those things in dealing with this, because it's funny you say that. I have a very fond uncle of mine who's... he's retired now, but he'd been a psychiatric nurse 30, 40 years, something like that, at one of the larger hospitals. Yeah. And he also has a very calm, very gentle demeanor, very soothing. And you need that. But I remember this is decades ago, but I was, we were talking about his job, what it was like, because he didn't really share too many of the stories, of course. But it seems like I'm calm, but it wears on you. In that that kind of energy, what he was getting is that kind of energy can affect you. Like, so what we're talking about, this environment here, it's not just necessarily ghosts, but the psychic energy, if you will, of these patients where everything can be cranked up to 11. And we're talking the depression, the sadness, the anger, the anxiety, all these things, the heightened emotions just for the living can have a negative effect. And so here, what's sad to me is that this poor young guy didn't even get to receive any treatment. It was so, just getting there. And it's like back then, you didn't think to frisk people. Right. And so, it starts off that way. But getting to your description of what makes this story a little bit different as far as a sighting is just the visual aspect of it. I love the descriptors here. Yeah, you're talking about the door itself, some kind of energy, spiritual energy, turning that door luminescent, and that it's actually seems like it's giving off light and this blue light. And then the description of the heat shimmer, which is commonly called heat haze, or some will call it an inferior mirage. And so people know, like when you see a hot pavement, you look off in the distance and it could look like water down the road in the ripples of the pavement, or you'll see that waviness. That's curious to me. And that's what he's seeing. I have some other very close friends who have seen ghosts, and one of them is a very close relative who described it as that typical blue-gray misty quality just this blob of, but a defined human shape. And that's fascinating. But here we have this shimmering effect, which is, that's going to say, different than the we often talk about the cloaking predator thing, where it's kind of mirror-like, but also kind of shimmery and like it's bending the light a little bit that you're seeing here. But what it reminds me of is that I believe it was a psychic medium who was, somebody asked them like, well, if we could see the ghosts, they look like this. Like, what do you think that they see when they look at us, the living? Right. And I always remember the description was that, well, imagine being underwater, in a swimming pool, and you're looking up and somebody, is standing at the edge of the pool, how that's kind of wavy like that. She said, that's kind of the impression that I get from their vantage point, the ghosts.
Oh, interesting.
And they see us and they can see somewhat clearly, but we're distorted and wavy. Or like if the sun is shining down into the water, and that we all have that very specific experience.
That's what Kevin talks about here, the shimmering.
Yeah.
Like almost like a heat, like what you see, related to Fata Morgana.
Yeah.
Or if you're driving on the, I always say the desert southwest, but if you're out in the if you've driven across the Four Corners region or Monument Valley, you see this on the road, that shimmering, which we've talked about ad nauseum in other Dead Letters as well. But the shimmer, there's something so interesting about that and intriguing about it. The other thing that I wanted to do was look into like the significance of the blue light related to this. And we've talked about this in the past because people talk about orbs and specifically, you know, yes, when we started the show, I was anti-orb and now I'm Mr. Pro-Orb.
By the way,
I still think when still photos, 90% of the time, it's dust or something or lens flare or whatever. But I also have seen orbs that defy normal physics that are not dust.
Right.
And I've also seen them be super prominent when something strange happens in our reality. So I've seen that on video. It's unexplainable. But the other thing I know is that when we had on Colm Kelleher and George Knapp talking about Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, and which was our first show of 2023, I think. I can't remember. It was a January show, I remember. But whenever that show came on and they came on, one of the things that was in Skinwalkers at the Pentagon was a follow-up information that indicated that people who had contact with red orbs had suffered long-lasting physical effects, and in some cases, very severe ones.
Right. And do you remember one of the anecdotes from the book? Because they were specifically talking about negative health effects. Like, wouldn't that be cool? Like, well, not really. Somebody was driving along and saw this orb catch up to the car or was coming perpendicular, go through the car, through them, and out the other
side. Their shoulder. And that was a red one.
Yeah.
And that led to long, you know, they tried to follow privacy, and I don't think it was necessarily HIPAA, but just be restrictive about the fine details there, but there was an implication that it caused significant problems, possibly even cancer, when this red orb passed through
this person.
So that is interesting because when I was looking up, you know, the colors, and I don't have this memorized. Mm-hmm. A lot of paranormal researchers and podcasters probably do, but red and orange color is often associated with lower vibrations of anger or malevolent entities, which is in that case what that would be. And that's been reported by these guys in Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, which for me, yes, I'm a big believer in the stuff that George Knapp says and Colm Kelleher. Those guys, I mean, if you go back to our Skinwalker series, I believe in the research that they're doing and what they're writing about. So I take that as more gospel as I do just an average anecdote.
Yeah.
But I guess with blue or white light, that's associated with higher vibrations. And in spiritism or theosophy, which we've talked about a lot on the show, blue often signifies apparently a spirit that is benevolent, calm, or seeking communication.
Oh,
which also suggests that the entity has retained some kind of human intelligence and is not just a mindless sludge or elemental.
Right.
So
interesting. These are notes that you found through doing a little bit of digging here, right?
Doing a little bit of digging. And people also talk about, there's also mention of it in folklore. I mean, we've talked about corpse candles and will-o'-the-wisps over the years in Welsh and British folklore. A corpse candle is a small blue ball of red light that appears to herald a death or mark the route of a funeral procession that it will take.
Ooh.
Seeing a blue light hovering near a specific room or door, as in our story here, creates a direct link to the death lore. It marks the location as a crossing over point.
Oh, there you go.
So that's the interesting thing. As you look back at the story and you think about this young man taking his own life, and maybe this is a reenactment of his soul leaving the room. But here's the other thing that's fascinating is that it seems to interact with Kevin. It seems to look at Kevin.
Yeah.
So then the two questions I would have is, do we have an interactive sentient spirit here, if you believe any of this at all? Do we have that? Or is it possible that when it's a crisis apparition and when this person's soul left his body, this is a playback of it, and when he stepped through that door all those years ago, he actually just happened to look in the same direction that Kevin was standing.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's an interesting concept where it's like, it's not really looking at you, but you perceive it that way. Well, I also believe in this concept. I've heard psychic mediums talk about this as well, where you have different levels of vibrational existence, I guess, or frequency. And I've become you with your orbs, me with frequency and vibration and particles, and this all being, you were just kind of hedging at it, but this is all part of science we don't understand yet.
Right.
There's a supernatural element, which is the unseen aspect of it, or spiritual, I guess. And then there's the other part, which is some type of physics we don't quite understand yet, but also incorporating some physics we do understand or are approaching it. And we're now talking about thought, energy, and again, manifestation, vibration, harmonics, and invisible forces like spooky action at a distance, quantum entanglement. And now we're starting to get onto that also, consciousness studies and experiments. So, but getting back to something you said about the colors, that's fascinating because again, it seems pretty, not cliche, but just like maybe obvious in a way, in the fact that, well, I had an ex-girlfriend of mine who is still a very good friend. She had a condition known as synesthesia, where when yes. she heard or played music, because she could play music, depending on the type of music, she would see bursts of color or soft swatches of color, you could say, like kind of misty. And I said, well, what is it like depending on the music? She says, well, if it's really pleasing music, like classical music or even something like the Carpenters, you know, something like yeah. that, where it's just very pleasing and melodic. It was, you know, the colors were blues and greens and it was very soothing. If it was like kind of angry music, and I would imagine like your death metal genres and things like that, where it was just kind of thrashing, which, you know, I sometimes enjoy, but she said she would see oranges and reds and those were kind of irritating. It brought on feelings of like irritation and agitation. And those colors would be associated with, the more sharp reds and oranges. And so I don't know if that's just a kind of a cliche, but the other thing I was going to mention is another one of my favorite stories from, bring this up a lot, Jim Harold's campfire really early on, maybe it's now over 10 years ago, maybe I heard this story, but a woman sitting on her couch looking up and near the light fixture, she starts to see what I remember being described as like a bluish illuminating pool of mercury, and it was shimmering out like a liquid that was coming out from the ceiling at a point, maybe the light fixture, but just spreading over the ceiling, like it was clinging to it.
Like a Tool video.
Like,
That was a reference to a band for people who are too young.
That's, to remember Tool videos. Well, they're still relevant.
Which were awesome. Those videos were amazing. I believe they directed them themselves. They're unbelievable.
Oh, really? Yes. Well, yeah. Sarah is a big fan, our editor. But looking, it'd be like looking at mercury spreading out on a flat surface, but upside down. But it being, I remember it being blue and glowing. And I think it said, oh, maybe, is that the thing where she heard in her mind's ear, oh, what a mirror we are, which matches up with another story I love of the entity coming down the stairs at a big house where the family had rented for the holidays and they were all sleeping there. And oh, my love, what a mirror image we are. And I believe that's the connection I made with this other story where she had heard that or was a thought in her head. And again, this is apropos because it's talking about the mirror image, what they see on the other side of what we're seeing. So getting back to what this entity saw in the hallway and turning its head, like, I think maybe it did see him, which is not often usual. I think sometimes things are an echo. Brad Steiger, I think, talking about growing up in an old converted, where his family grew up in a home, which was an old, like a Pony Express stop or stagecoach stop, and him seeing ghosts of the Old West. He said, what was unusual about that is that they would interact with him as a kid, like they would talk to him, I think. So in this case, though, I think there's also a yearning to be understood, perhaps some regret in the way things ended for this person, and a yearning to find that life energy that is no longer attainable. And so there's that connection. But I also love how Kevin here said, I'm not here for you. And he put his hand out. It's like, don't enter me. Don't pass through me. We're going to keep it here at a friendly level. But don't worry. I'm not here to disturb you. I'm not here to sequester you in any way, which I think, you know, again, I'm extrapolating. I'm making a supposition here that when this young person arrived at the facility, it's like that was also the turn of like, oh, here it goes. Here's my next journey. I'm going to be here for years, just incarcerated. Against, I don't want to be here. I don't feel good. I don't, you know, this is not the way I want this to turn out. And also the pause of time that they're in the bathroom thinking this through. And it's just awful, you know, just them pondering like, well, I got this gun. You know, do I want to be here? Because I know it's coming. and it's not going to be good, you know?
Yeah.
So you have all that weighing there, plus all the energy of all the other people that have wandered through the hospital over the years.
Yeah. And it's like we always talk about these crossroads, in this case, figurative and literal, you know, hotels, ley lines, highways, old trails, places that people have come and stayed, and places that people have been forced to stay at,
right?
Like a sanitarium or an asylum or a jail.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of places always seem to have some kind of residual energy. And here's another observation I'd like to make. You know, the further we get into this business of dead letter offices and astonishing legends, the more and more I become fascinated with the folklore aspects of these stories, and wish I had studied folklore more in college or something. Mm. And maybe someday I'll get to go back and do that, because it would be fun to do now with all of these stories that we have under our belts. And I'm always very flattered when folklorists and professors reach out to us and ask if they can mention some of our shows in their classes. It's very flattering.
Well, we know a couple, of course.
Yes, we do. And here's my point. When I first read this dead letter, my initial impression was, well, the backstory is very folkloric. It's very just, you know, the boy showed up, he had a weapon they didn't know, and then he, you know, in the coma and all of this kind of stuff. And you think that is a lot, sounds like folklore, stories are passed down, oral history. Maybe there's no connection between that and what Kevin experienced, because sometimes that is the case. And we know stories like that too, where you know, the person goes to the haunted plantation, mm-hmm. and here's the whole story about how the ghost was a slave that passed away. Right. And it's like, turned out that person never existed. Historically, they could not ever find, you know, that sort of thing. So there's just like, okay, there's the folklore and then there's the encounter. And sometimes those are two completely different, unrelated things. That's what I thought about this story too. Mm. But one of the things that Kevin points out is there were people working here when he was there that had gone to the funeral.
That's right.
So that is a direct connection to the story itself. And like all folklore and all stories of this type, there may have been some exaggeration or some details mm-hmm. lost, but he was sharing space with other living people who experienced the funeral of this person and possibly cross paths with the actual person as well.
Yeah, and you're right. And so you have that, another aspect of the story is the really drawn out, well, 7 years of being in this liminal state, neither alive nor dead. You're just kind of in that, where does your consciousness go? Can you go in and out of it?
I think you're trapped.
You feel trapped. You have this silver cord attaching you perhaps from your higher self to your astral self to the physical body. Can you travel? What are you seeing just laying there and being a prisoner? And that's another sad aspect of the story is that it's just speculation on my part, of course, but just I think this person not wanting to have to be in that facility for all these years with no end date, and then ironically they end up as a prisoner of sorts in this other state. And, it's like what you're talking about, though, just the state of being. So you have that, the person being there or their consciousness. Now you hear a lot about this too, that sometimes people come out of a coma and they said like, oh, I heard everything. I heard all the bad stuff you said about me, I was dead. And again, that's another horrible aspect of it. But what also ghost hunters look for, as what I said at the beginning, is some kind of historical anchor, which you're just talking about, is that people know the story. So it wasn't just fabricated. And you're right. You look at these other stories about, when you go to a haunted place, often if it's there's a famous resident or they think a ghost, I know these are set up for entertainment, but there'll sometimes be a plaque, as I was saying about the Randolph Infirmary there, that they'll have a little story about who stayed in that room mostly and whose spirit they think inhabits it. And that with the balloons, that was another young girl. And that's why they leave toys and balloons in there. That's also very near, I think, where the flowers appeared mysteriously. And in this case, it's like, okay, well, we don't really know because that would have been 1914 or whatever it was. You know, too long ago, nobody's left alive. Here, it's a pretty recent story. So you want that confirmation. And again, that there's context to it. And there's relevance. And again, it's a pretty good haunting. It's a pretty good encounter, I got to say. Pretty dramatic, rooted in an actual story and an actual person that part can be confirmed.
Kevin, thank you so much for writing this all out and sending it in to us. and sharing it with our listeners. It's really a fascinating dead letter, and we appreciate you being a longtime listener and the additional note that you sent us that was just for us. Thank you so much for that. Folks, if you have a dead letter that you'd like to hear on the show, please send it in by email to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
On Astonishing Legends, stories about mysterious places like the 2600 unit show how much our surroundings can shape us. At the Goddard School, the focus is on creating safe, caring environments where children can grow and discover every day. Teachers act as guides, helping kids build confidence and independence while supporting their social and emotional growth. Every child is unique, so learning is personalized to match their interests and pace. Parents find a true partner in their parenting journey, knowing their child is encouraged and celebrated. The Goddard School's legacy of quality and trust means families feel confident in their choice. If you want to see what a warm, supportive school community can look like for your child, visit goddardschool.com to explore programs near you.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Are you a fraud-paying American? It's a fact that one in four honest, hardworking, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. With LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, though, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, and get you your money back. Last year, the IRS flagged over $16 billion in refunds for identity fraud. That's billions of dollars that could come from your salary, overtime, or second job. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. And if your information does fall into the wrong hands, only LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists who are backed by the Million Dollar Protection Package. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.